Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur and Herald and Review for September 5th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Reuben Rooster Will Return. This is by Tony Reed, Herald and Review staff writer. From Mawikwa. There is now a much happier reply to the fundamental question of our time. Why did the chicken cross the road? Answer, because he was going home. Reuben, a 6-foot-tall, 300-pound steel rooster, had been chicknapped from the rural Mawikwa front yard of farmers Melanie and Daryl Hall on the night of June 23rd. They called in the Christian County Sheriff's Office and kept their wings crossed, praying for good news. The protect and serve guys delivered in style just recently by not only finding Reuben, but also delivering him back to his home. A Crime Stoppers tip had led a determined deputy to a lonely creek about 5 miles from Reuben's farmhouse, and here the rooster tail turned ugly. Reuben was resting in pieces at the bottom of the water, submerged in thick silt, with his legs cut off. For even hardened deputies, it ranked as one of the worst examples of foul play they'd ever seen. The cleaned-up pieces were rushed to the expert hands of welder Ron Emerson, who is used to fusing bits of broken farm machinery back together for the Halls. Suddenly called on to become a rooster reconstructor, Emerson rose to the challenge. He did very delicate surgery on him, says Melanie Hall, 57, and Reuben is all back in one piece. The full recovery flight path from chicknapping, dismemberment, and being dumped in a creek is no paltry journey, however, and still has some distance to go. Hall says Reuben awaits badly needed cosmetic surgery in the form of a scrape down, repaint, and seal coat, and so it's going to be a while longer before he stands triumphant in her yard again. In the meantime, she's keeping his fans abreast of what's happening with yard signs posted where Reuben had stood, offering terse progress reports. One of the latest ones read, Reuben requires orthopedic and cosmetic surgery. Will return. I am amazed at the number of people who have noticed he was gone and who told me they cared because he made their lives happy when they drove by and saw him, Hall says. Reuben was a gift from the Hall's 29-year-old daughter, Leanne, in 2015, and Melanie Hall enjoyed dressing him up in outfits to match the season or current events. Reuben sported Central A&M High School colors to support the sports teams, wore yellow rain slickers when the weather was bad, and had become a gladiator for Halloween. I just had no idea that putting a raincoat on him and all of that would make people really pay attention, Hall says. It meant something to them, and one lady told me she just has to drive by here to see what he's got on. It always makes her smile. Immediately after the recovery of Reuben's body, Hall had updated his adoring public with a sign announcing he would return and was currently in the intensive care unit. When we got back from being out one evening, someone had put a Get Well balloon out there and a vase of flowers, Hall said. And someone else left a small metal rooster with a message, Glad you are back. Hall can't stop crowing about the kindness of strangers and the diligent efforts of the Christian County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Bruce A. Kettlecamp says investigators into who was responsible for Reuben's abduction continue. But he's just glad this chicken story came home to roost with a happy ending. And I must really credit Deputy Don Broadus, who went far beyond what deputies would normally do in a case like this. He really took it to heart, adds the sheriff. I think he just realized what this rooster meant to its owners. He was determined to find out where it was and get it back for them, and didn't stop until he did it. Devotion above and beyond saw Broadus wading in up to his neck and probing the creek with a stick before bumping into Reuben's body parts. And this being a rural area, and Broadus, a part-time deputy who is also a farmer and just happened to have his own tractor available, he hitched up the machine to haul Reuben up onto dry land. "It makes me very honored and proud to have Don working as a member of the Sheriff Department," Kettle Camp says. Now it's down to the cosmetic surgery experts at Moequa Paint and Body to prep the rooster's metallic plumage and respray it in vibrant shades of yellow, green, red, and blue. "Oh, he's going to look a lot better, very vivid," says shop owner Rusty Donahoe, 57. His 28-year-old son Austin is an expert with a paint gun and relishes the challenge. "I am going to be a rooster shooter," he says. The plan is to have Reuben back on yard duty in time for the fall harvest, but you'll have to wait to get a full look at his revived and resplendent plumage, which will be under wraps at first. "We're going to put bandages on him," Hall says. Asked why, she says it's obvious. Everybody has bandages at first when they get back from surgery. And photographs accompany this article. The first one with Melanie Hall hugging her giant rooster. Melanie Hall was recently reunited with her local landmark lawn ornament rooster after police caught the thieves who stole the 6-foot metal figure from her rural Moequa yard. And a close-up of the face of the rooster. The lawn ornament was missing for more than 6 weeks before the thieves were caught. And from the local page, fall cleanup event set for September 10th. This is from Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer from Decatur. Large items and tires cluttering up your garage? The city will sponsor a free opportunity to get rid of them on Saturday, September 10th. The cleanup event is the third and final one scheduled for this year. It will run from 8 a.m. to noon in the parking lot of the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. "Paint, electronics, and yard waste will not be accepted," said Rochelle Irons, Director of Neighborhood Services. "While city staff members will supervise, residents should be prepared to lift their own items into roll-off bins. This is the last one for the year, and attendance and tonnage have increased," Irons said. "I anticipate that we'll have more people because it's a Saturday." That was part of the plan, giving residents an opportunity to dispose of items for no charge, which is always a good thing. Previous cleanup events have been very popular, with residents disposing of more than 18 tons of garbage at the first one in April. The most frequently discarded items include tires, furniture, mattresses, and other household goods. City staff scheduled the events at 4 neighborhood parks last year, but has found this year that the Civic Center offers more space and better traffic flow. Garbage haulers offer pickup of 5 large items for free, but those pickups must be scheduled in advance. "That is a service that is part of your hauler agreement," Irons said, "but a lot of times you forget that, or maybe you have 10 items instead of the 5. The city attempted to add electronics collection to the event, but Irons said she was unable to find a company that would take them. The Decatur City Council has encouraged the events as part of an effort to clean up neighborhoods and prevent illegal dumping. The city pays a negotiated rate to Advanced Disposal for the bins and R&R Services for the tire disposal. And next, by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review staff writer. This is also from Decatur. Book lovers find the motherlode. Lexi Elder, an avid reader, scoured the tables in search of new additions to her collection of serialized fiction. "It's nice to come here and get your favorites and put them on your shelf for when you want them," said Lexi, a Sullivan High School senior who serves as editor of her school paper. A repeat customer to the sale, held every year over the Labor Day weekend, Lexi said she especially appreciates the affordable prices. When she roamed the aisles in the Civic Center arena for the first time years ago, she filled a grocery bag with books for just $5, a tradition for the final day. After that, we were hooked, Lexi said. An army of volunteers has displayed the volumes according to categories, including cookbooks, mysteries, biographies, health, romance, gardening, and religion. One enormous donation from an estate included more than 1,000 books on military history, including the Civil War, the two World Wars, Korea, and Vietnam. There were 50 boxes of books from the one source, said volunteer Vern Thistlewaite. More than half of them were sold already. Angela Crow was there with her twin 8-year-old daughters, Sophia and Catherine, who enthusiastically filled a cart with stories about that magnificent sleuth, Nancy Drew, as well as those phenomenal child care specialists of the Babysitters Club and the intrepid pioneer family that lived in the small prairie home. They were excited to come out and pick out some new books, Crow said, as the girls tested the limits of their strength to carry their new treasures. They love to read. Catherine said she does much of her reading after school, while Sophia said her reading is mostly accomplished at school. They are third graders at Maroa Forsyth Grade School. Event chairwoman Amy McAvoy said the sale, which has been presented annually for more than 20 years, provides funds for library programs, including its gardens, as well as Baby Talk, Project Read, and other ventures. She said the book bag clearance always draws a big crowd. Everyone gets a standard grocery bag, which could cause problems for those who already have too many books. The best thing about the sale is you can always donate the books back or pass them around, McAvoy said. And the photos accompanying the article include the two daughters of Angela Crow, her daughters Sophia and Catherine, taking home dozens of books, and a photo of Lexi Elder, who is the editor of the Sullivan High School newspaper, stocking up on novels. Then, Kevin Barlow, a Lee News Service writer, writes, two Route 66 sites get grant help. This is from Lincoln. Two iconic Route 66 locations are closer to reopening in redefined roles thanks to recently secured grants. The Mill, a former Lincoln restaurant closed since 1996, is expected to open as a museum next spring, while Sprague's Super Service gas station in Normal is set to be turned into a visitor center and could be open this fall. Both plans are now possible because of grants from the National Park Service, Route 66 Corridor Preservation Program, said Bill Kelly, executive director of the Illinois Route 66 Scenic Byway. These are two iconic properties that have not been restored to a proper level of care that is really going to allow the traveling public to stop and fully enjoy them, he said. This is going to take care of that issue. Sprague's was originally built in about 1930 by William Sprague at 305 Pine Street in Normal and was a combination cafe, filling station, and service station. Earlier this year, the town of Normal acquired the property. The $31,398 grant will help repair and stabilize the exterior stucco and masonry and rehabilitate the last of the windows. This is wonderful news, said Route 66 enthusiast Terry Ryburn, who is restoring Sprague's and transforming it into the visitor's center. We are really working to get open sometime this fall, but the rain has really slowed us down. But we are going to put in a lot of effort and try to get it done. Project eligibility criteria require a minimum 50% cost share match by the applicant. After closing in 1996, the Mill at 738 South Washington in Lincoln deteriorated over several years, said the Secretary of the Restoration Committee, Jeff Ladd. In 2006, the Route 66 Heritage Foundation of Logan County was created to promote and preserve the mill and other Route 66 sites in the county. The $22,720 grant will provide accessibility to the building, including an entrance and bathroom, he said. We have also received recent $2,500 donations from Apex Clean Energy, the owners of the Sugar Creek Wind Farm Project, and from Illico Incorporated, a gas station and farm supplier which also operates convenience stores based in Lincoln. All of this will allow us to finish the interior work at the mill, he said. One project that was required was to bring the restrooms into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and now we are able to do that. Ladd said the mill is a prime example of early American roadside architecture and is one of the few buildings from the era still standing. The restaurant was first opened in the shape of a small Dutch windmill with sails on the front in 1929 under the name of the Blue Mill. The projects were 2 of 8 that were awarded by the National Park Service, which provides grant assistance for eligible historic preservation, research, oral history, interpretive, and educational projects. And now from the opinion page, Steve Chapman writes, "Is American multiculturalism a failure? Has the great American experiment in diversity ended in failure? That's the impression you might get from an array of recent developments, Black Lives Matter protests, anti-Muslim sentiment, resentment of undocumented immigrants, and last but not least, Donald Trump. We seem to be loudly fracturing and separating, not coming together. We are all pluribus and no unum." Trump's embracing of the alt-right movement, which was condemned at length by Hillary Clinton in a recent speech, highlights our apparent racial and religious polarization. His new campaign CEO is also head of Breitbart News, which regularly fans white fears and denounces multiculturalism. A characteristic Breitbart story began mournfully 4 centuries after white Christians landed in Jamestown and settled what would later become America. A report reveals that white Christians are now a minority in the nation that forebears settled. They were also a minority then, by the way. More mainstream conservatives also fret about the perils of diversity. "Multicultural societies," warned Victor Davis Hanson, a scholar at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, "usually end up mired in nihilistic and endemic violence." It's clear from Trump's capture of the Republican nomination that many whites regard demographic diversity as an evil, not a blessing. When he vows to make America great again, he harks back to a time when the country was more homogeneous. But the Trump phenomenon is a symptom of growing desperation, not growing strength, among a shrinking faction whose conception of America is obsolete. These people are in a frenzy because they are beginning to realize the battle is lost. Most Americans have come to embrace the inclusion of every race, ethnicity, and religion in our society. That wasn't always the case. In 1994, reports the Pew Research Center, 63% of Americans said immigrants were a burden. Today, 59% regard them as an asset. The shift is even more pronounced among young people, 76% of whom have a positive view of immigrants. For many people, racial and ethnic lines are increasingly irrelevant. In 2010, 15% of new marriages occurred between partners of different races or ethnicities, more than double the rate in 1980. Among all newlyweds in 2010, 9% of whites, 17% of blacks, 26% of Hispanics, and 28% of Asians married out, reports Pew. One reason white Christians are a declining share of the population is that more whites are abandoning Christianity. Since 2007, the share of whites with no religious affiliation has risen from 16% to 24%. Islamophobia is rife among Trump supporters. Two-thirds of them express negative attitudes toward Muslims, but only one-third of all Americans feel that way. Islamic terrorism has obviously fueled worries and suspicions. Even so, in 2011, 82% of American Muslims said they were satisfied with their lives, which suggests they don't find prejudice to be a major problem. The biggest source of racial tension is also the oldest one. The divide between whites and blacks, manifested in the economic disparities and broadly different views of law enforcement. Most whites express confidence in police, but only 30% of African Americans share that trust. Though blacks continue to feel they face discrimination, most whites believe they don't. Other groups, though, have integrated themselves into American society more fully than could have been expected. Asian Americans, who once faced intense prejudice, are likelier than any other group to intermarry and to live in racially mixed neighborhoods. Their households also have a higher median income than white households. In a society dominated by racial animosity, you'd see different groups segregating themselves or being segregated from others. That's not what is happening. Scholars John Logan of Brown University and Wenquan Zhang of the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater found that compared with 1980, in the 20 most diverse metropolitan areas, people of every race are likelier to live in global neighborhoods inhabited by whites, blacks, Hispanics, and Asian Americans. In these cities, half of whites now live in such areas. If multicultural societies were prone to intergroup violence, a growing immigrant population would generate more disorder. In fact, Harvard sociologist Robert Sampson has documented the rise in immigration has produced a sharp decline in crime rates. The transformed vitality of cities was most visible in the places that had seen the greatest increases in immigration, he wrote in the American Prospect. Achieving vitality through diversity? In America, that's not a naive dream. It's a solid reality. And an editorial on the opinion page, what others are saying, Army sadly lacking in accountability. Americans trust the U.S. military to protect lives and freedoms, but they cannot trust it to perform an honest accounting of its own budget. The United States' finances are so jumbled it had to make trillions of dollars of improper accounting adjustments to create an illusion that its books are balanced, Reuters recently reported. According to a report from the Defense Department's Office of Inspector General, the Army materially misstated, or simply made up, accounting figures totaling $6.5 trillion for 2015. The errors eclipse the DoD's total budget, which is $575 billion for 2016, because errors in one account cascade down to multiple levels of subaccounts as well. DoD and Army managers could not rely on the data in their accounting systems when making management and resource decisions, the IG's report concluded. In some cases, the Army simply did not maintain required data. In other cases, data was woefully inaccurate, and sometimes data was lost. For example, the Defense Finance and Accounting Services, which performs accounting functions for the DoD, was unable to produce accurate year-end financial statements for the Army because more than 16,000 financial data files had vanished from its computer system, Reuters noted. In order to fill these gaps in the financial statements, DFAS staff engaged in what some employees refer to as the grand plug, in other words, pulling numbers out of the air to make things up. As a result, the Reuters story observed, there has been no way to know how the Defense Department, far and away the biggest chunk of Congress's annual budget, spends the public's money. These revelations call into question whether the Defense Department will be able to meet a deadline to be ready for a comprehensive audit by September 30, 2017. The long-overdue audit would be the first in the history of the DoD, which for 20 years has flouted a law requiring all federal departments to conduct annual audits. The DoD has a long history of waste and a lack of accountability. In recent years, it has wasted billions of dollars in doomed Afghanistan reconstruction efforts, spent $1 billion to destroy $16 billion worth of obsolete and unused ammunition, and lost more than $500 million worth of weapons, aircraft, patrol boats, and equipment given to Yemen, some of which might have fallen into the hands of terrorists. Politicians plead for more defense spending for the troops with almost as much regularity as they seek more money for other programs for the children. But the DoD IG's latest report, and many others preceding it, clearly illustrate that much of the Pentagon's funding has nothing to do with the troops' welfare or the readiness of our military services. While both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have called for increased defense spending to strengthen our military forces, our hope is that these reports will not only reiterate the need for the Defense Department to undergo that long-delayed comprehensive audit, but also spur an honest discussion about its budget and the need to eliminate its wasteful spending and frivolous defense contracts. And from the local page, the local A3 briefs from Argenta, Arts Animal Fest, the annual Autumn Arts and Animal Festival will be at 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 10th in downtown Argenta. Activities will include a blessing of the animals, a pet costume contest, a bag toss tournament, pony rides, bounce house, puppet show, Scoville Mobile Zoo, food vendors, and a local business expo. From Mattoon Food Sanitation, Lakeland College Adult Education is offering free food sanitation classes for the first 12 applicants who register. Successful completion of the class qualifies students for the Food Protection Manager certification, valid for 5 years. The test costs $36. Classes will be held in September in Pena, October in Marshall, November in Mattoon, and December in Effingham. Call 217-238-8292 or visit the website at lakelandcollege.edu. From Effingham, Superhero Race. HSHS St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital is holding the 2016 Superhero Race at the Richard E. Workman Sports and Wellness Complex on Saturday, September 10th. The cost for the 5K run walk will be $30, and the cost for the 10K run will be $35. All proceeds will go towards St. Anthony's Diabetes Program. Racers can register online at stanthonyhospital.org or on the day of the race from 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. A kids' fun run will start at 8 a.m. with the 5K run walk or 10K run starting at 8:15. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, September 5th, 2016. Please stay tuned.